Billy Crystal ruined this one for me.
Really? Oh, yeah.
The City Slickers, when he had his own version of Rolling, 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 man, my rear is swollen. I can never hear this song without Billy Crystal on a horse.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Making of his own lyrics along the route.
Exactly.
Welcome back. You're tuned into Rosie on the House, talking composting with urban farmer Greg Peterson. A interesting, I think we're going to answer this along the way, but composting, where to start and how to... this person is in Tonto Basin, really hard clay ground.
I think
over the course of everything talking here, that question will be answered.
And well, and you know, and we already mentioned four different kinds of composting. Pick one and start. You know, we can talk about worm composting next, but you know, that's actually the simplest way to get into composting is worm composting.
Okay.
You go by, you know, there's, do a Google search on YouTube for how to build a worm composting bin, and, you know, for $20 and $10 or $15 for worms, you can have your first worm bin composting bin.
That's pretty affordable.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So the simplest way in is worm composting.
Okay. And we've got that talking point on...
right now.
But one point Rosie had asked and brought up in the bottom of the hour news break is the concept that composting is a cockroach magnet.
Oh, right. So here's the deal about that. I get that question a lot. You know, it's like, don't they attract bugs and so on and so on?
Which would feed your chickens.
Which would definitely. So I always put the composting in the chicken area.
Perfect.
Yeah, exactly. If you are doing composting correctly, and now we're talking about the traditional thermophilic hot composting. If you're doing it correctly, you're not going to have bugs.
Okay. Too hot.
It's too hot. Exactly. So, and that's where the non-composting stuff comes in first. It's because none of the things that I do with the non-composting attract bugs. In fact, the chickens even eat the bugs, right? So I always suggest that people do those three things first before they actually start traditional composting.
Okay.
And you asked me earlier how I do my traditional composting at the urban farm. I use pallets. I have four pallets that I stand up on end. So it's a 4x4x4 cube. And when I'm raking up all of that stuff out of the yard, grass clippings, if there's any left, all the stuff from the chicken coop area, it just gets nicely mixed and stuck in there. And then I let it sit for 6 months. So I just, you know, I just set it up and let it cook for 6 months. So it's more of a slow composting. That's not traditional thermophilic hot composting.
Now, somebody had posted something out there because pallets... repurposing pallets was quite a fad there, it seems like.
Yes. You have to be careful with it.
Because some of the pallets, what's treated with the wood for termite and bug prevention, you don't want that seeping into your compost. So you've got to be careful if you're using that pallet for composting or food or gardening, your vegetable gardening.
Right. So here's the deal. My research shows this about that. This about that? Does that sound funny?
I followed you.
there you go. My research shows this, is that pallets are treated with two different things. So it won't burn, because they don't want them to start on fire, and a pesticide. So you never want to use those directly in your garden. But then you have to make a choice. I just chose to use the pallets because it's the simplest thing, and if there's a little bit on them, it expels over time, And I get the question a lot from people. It's like, well, what do we do about all those pollutants? Well, unfortunately, we live in a very polluted world. In fact, I know way too much about how polluted our world is. And it, you know, it's a brain.
We don't want to go there.
Yeah, I don't want to go there.
Don't think too hard into it.
I believe that we can't go anywhere on the planet without finding some pollution. So we have to decide what our level of tolerance will be for that. I'm very clean at the urban farm. I've been organic for 28 years, and occasionally I use a pallet like that. So you just have to make a choice. The one thing I don't use on the urban farm is straw, unless you can get it organic. So oftentimes straw is used as a carbon part of composting.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can find it organic, and there's a couple of farms here in town that are growing organically certified wheat, so if you can find it organic, that's great. If it's not organic, it's highly infused with pesticides, herbicides, In fact, I have done a little bit of research, and there's some indication that farmers will spray their wheat crops with a herbicide to kill it right before they harvest it, because it's easier to harvest. So then you're getting that in your food when you're eating that harvested wheat. Plus, you're also getting it in, if you're using that straw in your garden, you're getting that. So you don't want to use that. Absolutely. You're speechless.
I'm taking notes here.
So let's jump over to vermicomposting real quickly, because I want to touch on these. Vermicomposting. Worm composting.
Okay.
So there's different kinds of bins you can get. I mentioned a tote earlier. I built a worm bin at the urban farm out of wood. It's 3 feet by 2 feet by about 5 feet tall. Because the big problem we run into with worms in the summertime is that they cook in their bin. So we have to keep them cool. So if you have a tote that you're doing with it, a buddy of mine went and bought one of those oil pans that you buy at the auto parts store. And he brings his tote in the summertime so that, you know, as the water percolates through, you have to have aeration in the tub. As the water percolates through, the water would percolate on that, you know, in the pan.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one big thing you can do for success in worms here in the valley is make sure that you bring them inside. The thing I've done is I have a, you know, industrial size freezer at the urban farm. And I'll freeze blocks of ice, and I put a block of ice on the worm bin every day.
That
keeps them cool.
Keeps them from cooking, and you can keep them outside.
Exactly. And then there's, more industrial versions. There's a there's one that's 6 feet by 6 feet by about 4 feet tall that you can buy. So if you're really into it, you know, you can do serious worm composting. But the easiest thing to do is just go get a tote.
Get it? Okay.
Just go get a tote.
And easier often means more successful.
Yes, absolutely. And less expensive. And less expensive. Because, you know, you don't want to be investing tons into this until you know, that you're going to have some success and that it's something you want to do. So, and then there's the soldier flies. They're a little bit more complicated to set up, although I have two different soldier fly bins at the house that were less than $100. Again, do a Google search on YouTube for how do you build a soldier fly bin and how do you raise soldier flies. And there's lots of information out there about that. Then you just feed them scraps and they self-harvest and the chickens, you know, go nutty for them.
Now, being soldier fly, are they really soldiers? Will they go out and kill regular flies?
I don't know why they do that. Although, often around rotting food, the soldier flies take up the space of house flies so that you're not getting as many house flies.
Okay.
And, you know, if you've had compost, you know, you see the grubs. You've seen the grubs in your compost bin. Absolutely. So.
Soldier flies.
Soldier flies.
Now, where do you buy a soldier fly, or do they just appear? Like the tomato. What's the
tomato hornworm?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How does it find the tomato? Now, I don't know that a tomato ever been planted on our property in Whitman. I planted a tomato and the tomato worm came. It came. I planted it from seed. Where does this tomato worm come from?
Yeah. Well, they're either a butterfly or a moth. I think they're a moth, so the moths fly. The soldier flies are out there. If you live anywhere where there's nature,
if you will compost it, they will come.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like I had a bucket of compost. This is so weird. I had a bucket of compost that was composting wood and food scraps and that kind of stuff. Didn't have any dirt in it. And when I dumped it out the other day, there was worms in it. I have no idea. There's no possible way the worms could have shown up in there, but they did. They did. So
nature has its way. It'll find its way.
Yeah.
So how do I know that I have a soldier fly? It's a grub in the compost that you'll see.
Yeah, search Google soldier fly picture. You know, picture of a soldier fly grub, picture of a soldier fly. I have never seen one in the house, and I have two soldier fly bins. I'm getting ready to start my third soldier fly bin at the urban farm. You don't see them inside the house, so they're not like house flies, you know, so on and so on.
Got a text. This person says, I use old bathtubs for my worms for a good luck.
Yes.
Now it's a 928 phone. So it could be Wickenburg North. It could be in a higher elevation. Mm-hmm. But so, you would have to probably drill a few holes out the bottom for water weeping.
You know what? I just make sure that the I've used bathtubs before. I put them up on blocks, and I made sure that the drain that it was tilted, and I make sure that the drain stayed free and open. It worked great.
Didn't have to drill any other holes.
No.
Perfect drain tilted.
It worked great, yeah.
That's going to your reuse.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Plus, when they're remodeling these older houses, the bathtubs are cast iron.
A lot of life left in those.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I want to share something with y'all. I have a really exciting thing that I do every year. It's called my Fruit Tree Education Program. And we've got our big launch event coming up at North Phoenix Baptist Church. I rent their fellowship hall, all 7,000 square feet of it.
I was going to say, that's a big space.
That's a big space. Well, last year we had about 300
7,000.
Yeah, last year we had about 3,000. I would have loved that.
And which one is that on Central? Is that at Bethany?
Central and Bethany Home at the Uptown Phoenix Farmers Market.
Okay.
And it's September 2nd. Saturday, September 2nd. That is Labor Day weekend, sorry, but that's the best weekend for it. And it runs half a day, and we have
It gives you a Monday to start getting your property ready for planting.
There you go. There you go. And so the event is a half a day, and we'll have three different speakers coming in. I'll be one of them talking about fruit trees. And I've learned a lot over the past couple of years. I've been growing fruit trees here in the Valley for 40 years. Planted my first ones in 1975, and I've learned a lot over the past couple of years. You know, people talk about this whole climate change stuff. I can see how it could be possible. I don't know. I have questions about it. But one thing I've noticed is that it's gotten harsher here in the past 2 years.
Really?
It has. Things struggle more. I have a grapevine that's thigh size at the base and covers my outdoor kitchen, and part of it died back this year. This thing thrives. And so I've learned a lot over the past couple of years about, about fruit trees and growing fruit trees even more so. And so the event is urbanfruittree.org. You can go check it out there. And I'd love to see you on that day. It's a free event.
What time does it start?
Starts at 8:30.
I always schedule this while I'm working.
But
I got notice here. We may get a little creative and
Hey, come and join us for a